a person who likes to.
What do you think of that?
Well, that's supposed to be us.
Get on that bill.
Good morning. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order. And welcome, committee. We did introductions our first day, and there was a couple of members absent or excused, technically. So, Vice Chair, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, colleagues and public. I'm Brent Barton. I represent Oregon City. I'm pleased to be back.
Great. Thank you. Welcome. And good luck in helping me out with this committee. So, with that, we're going to go ahead and get started. We're going to go out of order. We're going to start out at the bottom of the list, and we're going to do House.
Do you want to note that that's not wanted?
Yes, we're going to start with House Bill 2731. And for those that are here for House Bill 2415, we are not going to hear that bill today. So we're probably going to move it to February 11th. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and open up a hearing on House Bill 2731. And Jan, would you like to give us a little description of the bill before we get started with testimony?
Yes, Chair Holby and committee members, this measure authorizes the off-premises sales licensees to deliver malt beverages to retail customers, and it authorizes the holder of a direct shipper permit to ship malt beverages directly to Oregon customers, and allows brewers licensed in Oregon or another state to hold a direct shipper permit. No amendments before you today.
All right, and do we have people signed up on this bill? If we could get.
I was just speaking to Matt Marquis. Go ahead and call Matt.
Okay, let's have Matt Marquis.
We do interpretation.
And anybody he wants to bring with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good morning, gentlemen. If you would introduce yourself for the record and provide us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing Cascade Brewing today. I'll be very brief and let these gentlemen to my right speak. At the request of Cascade Brewing, we had House Bill 2731 introduced. The goal behind 2731 is to allow malt beverages to be shipped into Oregon, very similar to how wine and cider are shipped into Oregon today. There is a growing industry in Oregon with craft brewing, and we're hopeful that the shipment of these products are more recognized nationwide, and we feel by allowing Oregon to accept these malt beverages into Oregon, that will help with other states, allowing them to offer or to allow shipment of these beverages into their states as well. Just as a side note before these two talk, we have been talking to the distributors trying to work out a compromise. I think we're very close. I'll let them speak to that when it is their turn. But with that, I'll turn it over to Art and let him describe his issues.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Art Lawrence from Cascade Brewing. To give you a brief history of my involvement in the craft brewing industry, I'm one of the seven fathers of the craft brewing bill that was introduced here in 1985. The seven fathers are the Widmer brothers, the McMinniman brothers, Dick Ponzi from Bridgeport, and Fred Bowman and I. Hillsborough High School buddies started Portland Brewing, and I left that in 1994 to start my own without any more doggone partners in 1994. And so I own the Raccoon Lodge and Cascade Brewing. I have two retail establishments. And what I'm asking for is Oregon to set an example for the rest of the nation. And we did it with our brewpub legislation in 85, and it's been modified and corrected through the help of this legislative committee. And we have grown to a nation's leader in a big industry, and craft brewing is no new information to any of you. We're a big, big part of Oregon. And what I want to do is open up our borders to beer being shipped into Oregon. And I want to, this will allow internet sales. And that's when these laws that we're dealing with are all post-prohibition rules. They're 80-year-old rules. Nobody's ever asked to have beer included with wine and cider. It's just been overlooked. There wasn't a need for it. We didn't have internet for those kind of sales at that time. And now we have the internet. And the internet allows small producers such as myself that aren't set up with distributors that have shelf space, and we're not out competing with the big boys, with Rogue and other brewers for shelf space in the retail establishments, but rather our inventory would be on our website. And we want to go sell we want to sell within the United States. We were shipping to other states. Cascade Brewing sold $123,000 worth of beer last year, the first quarter, till we found out it wasn't legal. And it stopped.
Thank you.
It stopped. We got a bill from North Dakota for $9,000. We had a $1.08 tax bill. We were 9 days late. They had a $1,000 penalty per day. We negotiated to $500 and paid them. So this is something that the wineries have been doing for a long time, and we just want to get on par with them. As small breweries in the state go increase their production, it's going to happen with the small brewers. We have a lot of small brewers dabbled around the state, and those people don't have access to a lot of retail sales. And so this internet possibility will open up small brewers, of which there's over 200 brewers in our state right now, and we've got a lot of brewers growing in Southern Oregon and Eastern Oregon and remote areas, and they would really benefit from being able to sell online. I have a dog in the fight because I want to go and want to see this. I'm going to be 71 years old this month. I want to leave some laws in the state of Oregon, a lot of other people can benefit from. So I see this as something to grow our industry. And that's it for my testimony. Any questions?
Go ahead and provide your testimony, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Brett Joyce. I'm the president of Rogue Brewery. We have 9 pubs here in Oregon. We have a brewery in Newport, Oregon, a distillery in Newport, Oregon. We have over 300 employees and 2 farms in Oregon, in both Independence, not far from here, and out in Tie Valley, Oregon. So proudly an Oregon-owned for 26 and a half years company, and it's a privilege to be here today with you and with one of the forefathers of the industry and art to my right. This is an issue and question that centers around fairness, logic, and access to market. What I want to do here briefly today is just ask a few questions, share a few facts, and let you guys decide what makes the most sense. Question: is it logical or fair that Oregon consumers can order and receive wine and cider from wineries and cideries outside of Oregon, but cannot order and receive beer from breweries outside of Oregon? For me, that's just a simple question that doesn't pass the sniff test. Is it fair under current law that the only route to consumers for an out-of-state brewery is through an increasingly crowded 3-tier system? Has the wine business suffered because of direct-to-consumer shipments? Have wine distributors suffered because of direct-to-consumer shipments? And a few facts. The number of beer distributors in the country is shrinking every single year because there's massive consolidation in the beer distribution tier. Distributors are buying other distributors almost every week, and there are essentially no new distributors opening up. There are 8,391 wineries in the United States. Fact, there are over 3,700 licensed breweries in the U.S., with 1.5 breweries on average opening every single day across the country, which means there will be 4,000 breweries in the U.S. by the end of 2015, and over 5,000 at the end of 2017. So an increasingly crowded space with fewer outlets, fewer distributors to sell the products through. The average beer distributor sells an average of 36 different brands and has over 1,000 SKUs of beer in their respective warehouses. Fact, the CEO of one of the major domestic shipping companies has directed his team to begin testing a program that would allow breweries to ship beer directly to consumers, and this represents a major, major policy shift. Currently, both the major U.S. shippers have policies that permit the shipment of cider and wine, but prohibit the shipment of beer, another example of beer bigotry. Fact, at Rogue, we ship beer direct to consumers in 53 countries, including Uruguay, Thailand, Serbia, Israel, and Cyprus, but cannot ship beer to many states in the U.S. Fact, it costs over $10 to ship one bottle of beer to a consumer within the continental 48 states. So it's not cost-effective for a consumer. If they can get it, they're going to buy it on the shelf. But there are special products that they want to buy and can't buy off the shelf. Art has many of these wonderful products. Opinion, the long tail is here to stay, and there should be more than one route to market for breweries. Is it in Rogue's best interest to allow more out-of-state breweries to ship their beer into Oregon? Not really, but we believe in free market, the consumer's right to choose, and in a level playing field between wine, cider, and beer. And in summary, I wholly support House Bill 2731 to allow out-of-state breweries the same privileges that out-of-state wineries and cider makers already enjoy, with the hopes that other states will follow in a reciprocal fashion.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Evans.
Chair Hovey, members of the panel, first of all, thanks for coming in. I highly encourage more hops being grown in Independence. I think that's a great idea.
Of course.
The question I have is more just a tactical question than about the policy of the bill. If you're bringing down, or if we're bringing down the obstacles to allow other states to ship in with the plan of trying to increase shipments out, and it's something I talked with Matt about earlier, is there an action plan to try and help the other states lower their obstacles? That's the only thing. Unilateral disarmament is okay as long as everybody's actually disarming. I would be concerned about the impact upon your businesses if the other states decide not to follow. That's the only question I have.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Evans, I can answer that question. I am working with California brewers because they have the same issue.
Okay.
And their legislature isn't as friendly as the people in this room in dealing with California brewers. Hmm. So this is one of our big reasons. They're really watching us because we're going to be the leader in the nation in this. And California's got an eye on us. And the Brewers Association is a national organization. They are aware of it. And yes, we want to have an impact. And other states are looking at us for this. Wisconsin is looking at us. I forgot there's several other states as well, and I'm letting my friends in California do some watching of us and working with other states, but we will definitely be setting the tone and an example for other states.
Mr. Chair and Representative Evans, if I may just add to one of the things that I know we spoke about in your office and that we are talking with the remains with the distributors about is looking at a possibility of amending this bill to throw in a reciprocity clause and say that our borders would be open if the other state's borders were open as well.
Thank you.
That's the way it should be.
Thank you. Other questions? I think that Representative Evans asked something that I was thinking about, too, whether we should demand. I don't know that we do that with the wine shipping, though, but whether we should demand reciprocity from other states to enable their states to ship into this state.
Yeah, Mr.
So it
Chair.
Seems like a, kind of a protectionist mission to some degree, but at the same time, it's accomplishing both goals.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, and it could even give some incentives to those other states as well. And just on the wine and cider, I don't believe there is any reciprocity agreement there.
Thank you. Any other questions? Pretty straightforward concept. Appreciate you gentlemen coming down this early in the morning and giving us your testimony to a very important industry for Oregon. So thanks.
Thank you.
And do we have anyone else left to testify? Paul Romaine. Good morning. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm here. Yes, I am. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent along with my daughter, Danelle, represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. And we're somewhat agnostic about the bill, and actually the suggestion that Representative Evans had is what we wanted to talk about, but I want to give you a little bit of background. I'm also wary of unilateral disarmament, having seen it in other areas where it doesn't seem to work very well. When the wine shipment first came into being, it was a reciprocal wine shipment law that basically said that we'll allow people to ship into Oregon if they allow our people to ship into their state. And what that did is it opened up the market. So if you simply open up our market, there's no incentive for the other states to open up at all. So it makes a lot of sense to make it a reciprocal privilege. We don't care about shipment within the state, but from our existing breweries and brew pubs. That's great. Most of the product goes through us anyway. It's wonderful. All beer is taxed, and I know some of you think it's a little too low. Some of us think it's way too high. But
here we go.
All beer is taxed so from bottle one, so it does affect a little bit. Trying to collect from somebody in another state is a little difficult, especially with a small amount of tax. But if it's reciprocal, we have less of an issue with this. The economics of beer shipping, what happened was this whole thing broke open when wine started doing some shipping about 15, 20 years ago. And wine, it made a lot of sense because each bottle was very expensive. So the cost of shipping made it economical to actually get it from another place sent in through common carrier. Beer, it becomes a little more difficult because usually the price of the package is so low that the shipping costs are more than the package costs. So you run into the economic issue. But that's an issue that the player should deal with, not the law. The law should allow it. If it becomes economical, then it's fine. So we don't believe there'll be a lot of shipping just because it doesn't really make sense. In the state of Oregon, consumers have access to probably more beer than anybody in the world. It's not like we're a beer-deprived state. They do a wonderful job for the brewers here, both the brewers and brew pubs. So with the reciprocity portion put in there, we would be fine with the legislation. And just for one other point, for those of you who are I've been doing this for way too long, so I forget if I haven't told people things because I've probably told it previous years. But what you do can't open up anything in any other state. This is, under the 21st Amendment, that each state controls what they let in. So you have to go to that particular state to actually get them to allow this to happen. So simply by passing this law will not magically open up things. Art Lawrence is right. It will show that we're willing to accept if they're willing to accept. But this is probably not like wine, but at least give people a chance to see if it is. Thank you.
Questions? Just one, if we put in a reciprocity clause like suggested, who's going to be tracking? Would that be the OLCC that would track whether or not particular states have reciprocity so that our industry knows who they can ship to and who not?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, that's originally with wine, you had to get the permit. OLCC would issue a permit to somebody in a state where they allowed us to ship in, so it would be their burden basically to make sure that occurred. It's not a real difficult burden.
Thank you. Any other questions? Not seeing any. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Appreciate it. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Not seeing any, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2731. I'd like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2567.
That's the OLCC's bill.
Which one did you want?
2671, sorry.
Let me close that public hearing on House Bill 2567.
I like the way he runs a meeting.
So which one did you have?
2567 is Representative Williamson.
Okay.
And 2568 is Representative Williamson.
So let's try this again. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2567.
That's what I just did.
Did you? I'm sorry. I'm very sorry for creating the confusion.
Then.
I'm looking
Chair
at
you. Chair wants to talk about 6-7.
We're talking
about
my new clerk.
I'm an administrator. Sorry.
We've been researching the industry this morning.
Open and close.
Well, obviously, it's very straightforward.
Would you please give us a description of the bill?
Let me see if I can mislead you in any other ways. I'm sorry for that. House Bill 2567 allows the OLCC to appoint a distillery licensee to serve as the distillery retail outlet agent for another licensed distiller. And it allows distillers to enter into some compensation agreements for the licensed distiller to act as that retail outlet agent for another distiller. And it allows the distillery licensee to make retail sales and to pour tastings of another distiller's product as long as that licensee is the appointed retail outlet agent for the other distiller. And it allows the distillery licensee that holds a special event license to pour tastings, to sell by the glass, and to sell by the bottle another licensed distiller's product for which it is appointed the retail outlet agent. That's a weird one.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Business and Labor Committee. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Jennifer Williamson. I represent House District 36, the west side of Portland, downtown, northwest, and southwest Portland. So, Mr. Chair, this summer I had the good fortune of wandering through my neighborhood to Bull Run Distillery, which I like to say is in my district, but Representative Greenlick will always point out that it is actually not. It's a block out of my district. It's in his. And when my husband and I were there, we tasted their delicious products in their tasting room, and I got to know Patrick, who is the owner of that business, and you'll hear from him later. I was excited about learning about the business and all of that, and so later on, I was able to meet with a handful of distillers, and I said, you've got this growing industry in Oregon. We're at the very early stages, much like we were with wine in the 70s. What do you need as an industry to grow? And they came back with a very concrete list of problems in the statute that if we could fix, we could grow our industry. And you're going to hear about the distillery industry in both this bill and the next one, 2568. And I just want to put a disclaimer on the record, which is this is not about drinking more. This is about drinking Oregon liquor. So we want people to pick Oregon products off the shelves as opposed to products from Kentucky or wherever else. So that's the whole point of these two bills. So this bill, 2567, is that list of provisions that are problematic for our distillers. It is the much needed statutory updates. So the first is allowing for special event licenses. Breweries and wineries can already do this, but distilleries cannot. And this means that they can't have after hour events, cocktail classes, things like that. So it would be a benefit to the business to be able to bring more consumers in, to actually teach them how to make a cocktail with that distilled spirit, as opposed to just tasting it straight. And so it would help enhance the exposure of the individual distilleries and the distilleries as an Oregon brand. Additionally, this bill aligns Oregon law with federal law around transportation of bulk spirits. It updates the product usage restriction so that distilleries may use products that are not distilled on site to, for example, make a cocktail. So if you have Crater Lake gin and you want to make a gin cocktail to highlight that, you can't use vermouth unless it's been distilled right there. And so it's part of allowing our distilleries to use their products in a way to show the public how to use them and to make a good cocktail. And Ted and Patrick, who will be coming up later, can go into more detail around that, what that looks like. But it's something that we need for them to show the full range of their products to the public. And finally, this bill would allow joint tasting rooms. And what currently right now, you can't, if you have a tasting room, you can't have another local distilleries share that tasting room with you. So a good example, these are small businesses, right? They don't need extra overhead. You go to the Pendleton Roundup, it would be really great if a handful of distilleries could get together and share a tent to taste Oregon whiskey. But they can't do that now. And so, like I said, this is a short list of things that I think would really make a difference in growing this industry and would make a difference in growing Oregon's brand as the craft distiller capital of the U.S. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Looks like you're off the hook this time.
I'll be back. Don't worry.
So I'd like to call up Ted Pappas and Patrick Bernards. Forgive me if I mispronounced your name. Good morning, gentlemen. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
My name's Ted Pappas
from Big Bottom Whiskey.
Yeah, thank you. I'll get to that part.
I'm Patrick Bernards with Bull Run Distillery.
So I'll go ahead and start. As I mentioned, my name's Ted Pappas. I'm the owner of Big Bottom Distilling, which is in Hillsboro, and I'm also the president of the Oregon Distillers Guild. Today I am joined by Pat, who will give a little bit of additional testimony with that. Let me start out with this one. There already is a dash one to this, and the dash one was imperative because it did actually take a look at some of the terminology that was used in the bill and modify that. And so I will actually be speaking to more to the dash one that's happened. I'll also say that a dash two is needed. There's still a little bit of some language refinement that could happen, and I'll point that out as it happens. I also like to say that a lot of the context of this, we worked in partnership with the OLCC, because with certain changes with this provision, it has to turn around and become rulemaking in order to implement it successfully. So we need to make sure that we are on the same page with that. So I'll go ahead and start. I do a lot of traveling throughout the country, and people ask me, they go, what's it like to have a distillery in a control state like Oregon? I respond with one word, and I say outstanding. And then I go into detail a little bit more from that. And a lot of it has to do with the partnership that we have with the OLCC and with our retail agents. It's a very cooperative type of arrangement that we have, and it benefits us in general. Changes to this stuff that we're asking for here, in addition with the Spirits Board, I think makes us even stronger. When I sit on phone calls with other Distillery Guild presidents, and I get to proudly list out the things that as an Oregon distiller I am able to do, there's a lot of silence on the phone because the other states can't do it. So it's something that really makes me proud. Now, with the support from you, we really want to get this bill passed. It's going to allow improvements to the Oregon statutes related to distilled spirits and implementing changes that will enhance our ability to showcase and sell our products, helping us be more successful. One thing I will note, there is no funding required for this bill. There's four main areas of change. The first one is the sale or transfer of bulk spirits. This is actually a federal activity, and this is an area that does need a little wordsmithing. Currently, right now, in order to transfer from one distilled spirits plant to another, we actually have to file certain forms with the federal government. So the feds actually know ahead of time before I sell a tote of GNS to another distillery. So it's something we can't do just on the spur of the moment. And then, of course, once we do it, we have more paperwork to file to show exactly what was transferred, because then we have to put it yet on another report to the feds showing that we've received this. Currently, right now, it's not possible for us to transfer bulk spirits to the commission. The commission does not hold a valid DSP. So that's part of that section that needs to be reflected accurately. It's just not possible for me to sell a tote of GNS to the OLCC. It won't happen, and they can't, in turn, do the same thing back to me. There's no way for them to actually document that. Sampling laws right now, we're only allowed to use our own spirit in a cocktail. So this is about the cocktail portion, which is, I believe, in section 4, or number 4, I believe. That's kind of prohibitive because I can come with a lot of great cocktails, but it usually requires me to actually have another spirit. In 1930, the first published recipe of Satan's Whiskers was done, and that's my favorite gin cocktail. Unfortunately, I can't do it for an event because it involves having orange Curacao. I don't make orange curacao, and I honestly don't think I ever will. Having us allow for this one area to actually turn to items that are available on the OLCC list will allow us to be more creative with our mixology aspirations and be able to showcase our spirit accordingly. Note that this is the only section then the changes that are being submitted that would allow us to actually go a little bit beyond Oregon distilled products. But in the language, it says that we have to use it with an Oregon distilled product that we manufacture. So it does still has parameters on there. It just really allows me to go and buy a bottle of orange curacao from the store. Special events license and distilleries. We can do an SED right now, but what was kind of interesting is when the language was done a couple years ago that expanded our ability for SEDs, the language was put in there that we could not have them on our own premise. This was a little bit funky because we're like, wow, we've invested so much in our facility, but I can't do a special event here, which would involve maybe an after-hours cocktail class or some other type of event. And it kind of makes it difficult to really show off our facility to be able to do that. All we're asking for is parity with the other members of our industry with wine and beer. Joint tasting room, this is an interesting one. Federally, we're allowed to have what's called an alternating proprietorship. And an alternating proprietorship is when two or more distilleries agree that they will actually alternate parts of either their equipment or locations in their warehouse during various hours. It's not readily used. It usually involves a lot of paperwork. But what it does is it allows to gain some economy of scale, especially if you want to invest in a nice still. Could cost a lot of money. You get someone to go in on it. You agree to a schedule. It makes things a lot easier. So the feds are allowing this kind of shared activity to occur. Once we go into the tasting room, it's not there. We have to completely operate as separate. So if you walk into my whopping 12x10 tasting room out in Hillsboro with my very extensive hours of Saturdays noon to 4, you're actually going to find two people crammed behind the bar. Because we have to operate that way, because we have to keep everything separate. With a joint tasting room, all we're saying is allow us to pitch in for the same guy who can pour both samples. And it would be samples of product that we produce. So when we take a look at the sampling part that applies in joint tasting room, why in the bill you see language that says, or another distillery licensee or distillery license outlet, that's the reason why. It's purely so we can have one guy, they can pour my samples, they could pour somebody else's. Mm-hmm. The same language actually rolls into the area with a special event license, which is what was mentioned earlier about Pendleton Roundup. Pat and I even talked about this, and then I actually mapped it out and went, wow, I'm really not sure if I want to drive that far. I said, and then I've got to pay a staff member to be there if I don't end up doing it and hotel and all that. And we were trying to figure out a way that we could joint together, send one person to do it and represent multiple distilleries in a whiskey lounge type approach for 3 or 4 days. It would have been great to do, but we couldn't do it because we knew that we were in violation of the law at that point in time. So just to kind of summarize up, bulk spirit sale and transfer will allow Oregon distilleries to look in-state before we have to go out-of-state for product. That will reduce transportation cost and will obviously reduce carbon footprint, and we can keep it in Oregon. And I know that there are distilleries that really want to be able to produce bulk spirits and retain them in the state. Though we produce a lot of different spirits in Oregon, changes to the mixed cocktails section is needed, as there are just some spirits that aren't produced in the state. That's all there is to it. Holding events at our own facility, that just makes sense. Pat will go into a little more details because they do a lot with that in the Bull Run. And then joint tasting rooms will put our products in more places, increasing the awareness for our products. And one thing I want everyone to remember, and it's kind of an obvious one, but consumers do purchase a bottle when they come into the tasting room. And that's very true. We seed that sale. We get that person on our product. But the subsequent ones are done in our retail outlets. The retail outlets are well-stocked. They have more variety of what's out there. A lot of them have amazing Oregon sections. And so those second, third, and subsequent bottle sales are done at the retail outlet. We actually would prefer it that way. It saves us from having to do our spiel of our company every single time. So I'm going to ask, support these changes. It will help our industry grow. And just as I love Satan's Whiskers cocktail, I really don't want to start manufacturing Oran Curacao.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, I'm not going to add a whole lot more to what Ted just said. I think it's kind of self-explanatory. But I will say, in addition to being co-founder.
Go ahead and restate your name.
Sure. I'm sorry. Patrick Bernards with Bull Run Distilling Company, co-founder of Bull Run Distilling Company. And in addition to that, I serve on the board of the American Craft Spirits Association. I serve on the board of the Oregon Craft Beverage Council. And I am the past president of the Oregon Distillers Guild. And as I like to say, that in 250 will get me a cup of coffee at Starbucks. But really the point is I talk to a lot of our peers across the country. And we do talk about and we get to brag about a lot of the things that we benefit from our control state. But there are a handful of things that, you know, cause us a little bit of angst, and several of them have been noted here today. I think these are common sense changes for us, again, pointing out that we're not asking for additional funds of any sort. This is just changing the law to be to allow us to make money a little more easily, and I think responsibly as well. So with that, I'll just close my remarks and questions, I guess.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Committee. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Chair Holdy. Just out of curiosity, who all belongs to the Distillers Guild?
We currently have 31 members, and our DSP count in the state is somewhere in the high 50s, maybe creeping into the 60s. But of the 60 that are there, there are several wineries that have distilled spirit permits. So out of the, let's just call it lower 50 operating DSPs, the 31 members are members of the Distillers Guild.
And who are some of the big players that are in the Distillers Guild?
Me, of course.
You're, you're obviously the biggest. You're the
big
chief.
Big dog, big dog.
You are the chief.
India Spirits, HRD, Clear Creek, Bull Run, Crescendo, which is out of your district, Ben Distilling, Oregon Spirit Distillers, John Blank's Camp 1805, which is one of the newer ones out in Hood River, which is doing a lot of cool things out there. So just to name a few, and I think one of the handouts we had might have had the list of the guild members.
I would just add to that, I think it's safe to say that of the members that we have, it really accounts for the lion's share of the products that are being sold today in the state. A lot of the newer companies are not quite of the size to maybe invest in being part of the guild at this point in time, but we fully expect that that number will grow.
If I could, Mr. Chair, follow up?
Follow up.
The other question I'd have, too, is just kind of looking, because I know with OLCC, seed licenses, you have to serve food and things like that, and I'm not seeing it anything like that covered here, but do you fall under that same category for your tastings and things like that because you are a little higher, more potent of a drink than a glass of wine?
So I'll try to be brief on this one. The current sampling laws in our tasting rooms have a definitive limit on the amount that we can do. So it is present there. It is present and when we do a liquor store tasting. When it comes to actually doing the cocktail, so I'll go in on that one. When we do an SED, we are required to list three food items that are being served at the event that will have a cocktail. So it's in the actual special event distillery license.
So as we try to avoid acronyms too much, you know, for the people that have never been to a special event, so we wouldn't know what that means. I got a question. What's a DSP?
Distilled Spirits Permit.
Okay. There we have it.
My military day is coming back to me. I could speak to this entire presentation in acronyms if you like.
Really yeah. And none of us would know what you were talking about.
We all just nod.
And your bill would probably die at that point.
He will spell it out.
Questions? Other questions? Representative Evans.
Yes. Chair Holvey, just a real quick question about one of the points you raised about the forms, the paperwork. Item one, you mentioned that when you transport before and after, there's a lot of paperwork. Is that number, I guess first question, is that through ATF or who's that through? And second of all, if it's a state function, is there a way we can make those forms electronic so they're not as burdensome? I mean, is it still paperwork or is it electronic or how can we make that easier for you?
It's through the TTB, the Tax and Trade Bureau, which is part of the ATF. Right. So it's all federal stuff that we end up doing. And though it is something that we have to complete, it's not that bad. So would we like to do it? No, of course not. But it's actually not that bad to get it done.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, on that?
Follow up.
Is it something where we could work with the delegation to try to get the federal rules changed to make it easier?
We could. They're bigger fish to fry right now with them. So I'd probably want to save it for the big fish.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. I don't see any other questions at this point, and I'm sure you're going to be back here in a few minutes. Appreciate your testimony.
Excellent. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.
So up next, Marshall Kova. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Hovey, members of the committee. My name is Marshall Kova, here this morning representing Associated Liquor Stores of Oregon. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on House Bill 2567. Oregon's 248 liquor stores are very supportive of Oregon's craft distilling industry, and we have enjoyed many of the benefits of the industry as it continues to grow and prosper, and at the same time, we have been very instrumental to the success of the industry, as Mr. Pappas mentioned. We have a very symbiotic relationship that has been mutually beneficial to both of us and is the envy of in the nation. We were initially concerned about House Bill 2567 we believed it was worded too broadly to be limited to Oregon craft distilleries. It would have allowed any two distilleries, Oregon or otherwise, to join and to, in essence, compete with an existing store. We are in support of concepts that will allow both of us to enhance the other. And we don't ever want to be in a position where legislative policies may discourage current liquor store owners from carrying these Oregon products on their shelves. We reviewed the -1 amendments and look forward to the -2 amendments and suggest that there's a couple of clarifications, I think, but from adding Oregon in a couple of places, Oregon distillers might clarify and limit it down to exactly what their intent is. We understand that that is their intent. We are very appreciative of the willingness and the responsiveness of Representative Williamson's staff. We had some concerns late last week, and they got right on it, and I appreciate that and met with me. And we think that our suggested edits and the -2 amendments, this will again be a win-win for Oregon craft distillers and for liquor stores. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions of Mr. Koba? Thank you much.
Yep.
With that, is there anybody else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2567? Seeing none, we'll close public hearing on House Bill 2567 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2568. Jan, give us a brief description, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this establishes a 9-member Oregon Spirits Board that's going to support the Oregon distilled liquor industry, and it directs the board to operate State Distilled Liquor Room. And it directs the board to create and maintain a long-term strategic plan that will guide the allocation of funds and the award of grants. And establishes the Oregon Spirits Board Fund with monies in the fund continuously appropriated to the board for its use. And it directs the OLCC to withhold for payment to the board 1 cent to 4 cents per bottle of distilled spirit sold, depending on the volume of the bottle. There's no amendment before you. And the measure does have a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Thank you. Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Again, Mr. Chair, I'm Jennifer Williamson. I represent House District 36, the west side of Portland. As I mentioned earlier, with House Bill 2567, I sat down with distilleries in Oregon and asked them what would help to grow this industry in Oregon. And in addition to the technical fixes, what they talked about was something that was similar to the Oregon Wine Board, but for distilleries, an organization that would help to market Oregon distilleries and grow the brand of Oregon distilleries. So we all know that whether it's Stumptown Coffee that you can now get on the East Coast or Widmer Brothers Brewing. You can get a beer in the Midwest. I was in Hong Kong last summer, and I had my bottle of Oregon Pinot. And that's what we want for Oregon distilleries. And in order to do that as an industry and as a state, we need to support them in the way that we have our breweries and our wineries. And I think that this is the next logical step in creating an Oregon distillery board that would serve the same functions that we've seen in other industries to grow them in the same sort of rate. So with that, I will turn it over to my good friend Margaret Doherty.
Thank you. Hey, for the record, Representative Holvey, members of the committee, I'm Margaret Doherty. I am the representative for House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland and home of Indio Spirits. The one thing that I think grows any sort of organization is to be able to have a professional board that you can go through and work with and bring issues to and problems to and ideas to. And that's kind of the purpose behind the Oregon Spirits Board. We do have a wine board, and they've been able to go through and help promote wines in Oregon, and that's one of the main purposes of the proposal that we have. It would be a board for the distilled spirits industry. They would have advisory and technical committees that would go through and help in the industry. It's basically to grow the distilled spirits industry in Oregon. They would go through, and this is from the bill itself, to help with manufacturing, marketing, promotions, education, research, development, to be able to help the distilleries go through and develop sustainable business practices, support and promote distilled liquors throughout the world. And I think that's something that's very important, along with a strategic plan to have our world-class distilled spirits be able to go to the rest of the United States. So anyway, what it is, it would be a nine-member board, and it would be funded by a portion of revenue from the distilled spirits and the sale of the product. So it's very good idea, should pass.
Mr. Chair, if I could add just a little detail to the funding portion. Currently, for every bottle of distilled spirits in Oregon, there's a 50% tax, which is one of the highest taxes actually in the U.S. on liquor. So this bill would allow for between 1 and 4 cents of that tax to be directed through the OLCC to the board. So what that does is out-of-state distilleries will be paying for our distillery industry to grow, because the vast majority of bottles of alcohol sold in the state are from out of state. So we would have our distilleries' competitors helping us to grow our industry. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fantastic. Second, something that I learned in doing all of this research, Oregon State has one of what I believe are two distillery programs in the world. And having this kind of board that could focus on actually the academic research and development in the fermentation sciences at Oregon State. We know we have cheese. We heard last session we invested in the fermentation sciences. So it's the cheese, the bread, the wine, the beer, and the distillery industry at Oregon State. And Oregon State has a hand-me-down still. And I would love for this board still to help develop the program at Oregon State so we can become the world leader in distilled spirit science. And finally, as you heard earlier, we have about 60 distilleries in the state. We did a survey, and Representative Rob Nose wins by a landslide of the number of distilleries in his district, because he has the coveted Distillery Row in Southeast Portland. Yep. So if you have any questions, ask Representative Nose.
Too bad I'm not a big whiskey drinker.
Oh, this building might make you one.
Okay. Just good to know.
Mother's milk is
Representative
my
Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll have to field research.
My question would be, I mean, we're looking at 1 to 4 cents to go to this board and everything. And the money right now goes to the general fund budget. I mean, to me, it'd make more sense if we took this and directed it to K-12 education or something like that, because these guys do a great job of promoting their own distilled spirits, as they do in Rob's district, we just heard, and everything. And I just see, with limited funds and how we're struggling, I'm just trying to see the purpose of this bill when these guys can do everything on their own. We don't need to get involved in their business to help promote it when they can do it themselves.
Well, I think one part of this is when you've got a board that you bring everybody together to go through and do this, first of all, it increases sales. When it increases sales, it increases revenue. When it increases revenue, it increases the taxes that come in. And so I think this is a very, very small, minute part of the money that we collect from taxes that will go through and not only promote the industry, but grow it and make it bigger and have it on a worldwide basis. And so, you know, it's like sometimes you have to spend money to make money. This is one of those cases.
Well, and I would add to that, Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, that these are small businesses. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about small local businesses who may on their own be unable to do a marketing campaign. And it's not just marketing Bull Run Distillery, for example. It's about marketing Oregon as we have in the wine industry and in the beer industry. We're branding our state and the things that we are known for. And whether it's tourism that comes to wine country or our breweries selling beer across the U.S., branding Oregon as a place where these kind of businesses thrive and that the state is helping these small businesses grow, I think is something that shouldn't be lost in this. And it is not a significant amount of money. I mean, we're talking about 1 cent out of a tax that already exists to grow an industry, and I think that that's the trade-off, that I'd rather have the tax revenue from growing businesses to go to K-12 than to ensure that this 1 cent stays in the general fund.
Yeah, and I think on top of that,
HRD is not a small company. Yeah. I mean, there's some of those distillers that they were naming are not small companies.
Sure, but the vast majority of them
are. Right. And I think the one thing when you go through and look at something like this, if you see what the Oregon Wine Board has done to the sales and the promotion and the of wine in Oregon, it has been huge, and this is the same sort of thing we're going to see from the Distilled Spirits Board. I mean, people come to Oregon to spend money, to go on vacation, to go to wine country.
Yeah,
and
they
do the same thing with going to Southeast Portland to Distillery Row.
That's right. They will go to Representative Nose's district and spend some money.
Yes.
Are there any other questions?
We'll do an exchange program.
Representative Escobel.
Your district can come to mind, right?
Alcohol. Thank you, Mr.
Programs.
Chair. I'm curious, you said 1 to 4 cents. Are you talking about the 50 cents? Are you talking about every dollar that's collected tax-wise? Because that would make, on a dollar, it would be 1 to 4%, whereas on 50 cents, it would be 2 to 8%.
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobel, it is between 1 and 4% of the 50 cents that is already collected.
1 and 4%, not cents.
No, cents.
Okay, it's 2 to 8% of the total.
1 penny to 4 pennies out of that 50 cents.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. But the 50 cents is not increasing.
Nope.
So,
no
any
tax
other
increases in this
Any
bill.
Other questions? thank you,
thank you
very much.
Much.
I appreciate that. Probably see if he wants to do it right now.
It's coming from some Paul's address.
It's a sales tax, right?
You know, we obviously don't call it that.
As long as they grow the top in the sales. There you go.
So cigarette taxes are sales.
Well, they grow the wheat right from the sun.
Correct. So if I understood correctly, directing some of the tax or one time neighborhood of ours. Powers already
funeral Powers. Really? I used to play basketball there, so I go there and play Powers. Anyway, my dad was out to an erosion control for the BLM Forest Service.
So up next we have Leon Glaser, Steve Thompson. On the wrong bill or something?
Nope.
They signed up. They're not here.
Chair Holby, should be myself, Patrick Bernards, Ted Pappas, and Leon Glaser.
Oh, okay. Fine.
We're tough.
Good
Good morning again, Chair Holby and members of the committee.
Joining me, I'm Patrick Bernards from Bull Run Distilling Company. Joining me here this morning, and they'll introduce themselves again, Ted Pappas from Big Bottom Whiskey out of Hillsboro, Oregon, and president of the Oregon Distillers Guild, as well as Leon Glazer, who is the owner, winemaker, head distiller at Glazer Estate Winery and Distillery. He has a particularly unique position in the state of Oregon, being that he runs both a winery and benefits from the Oregon Wine Board, and owns a distillery and hopes to benefit from an Oregon Distilled Spirits Board. With that noted, I do want to also thank Representative Williamson and Representative Doherty for their support of this initiative that has been huge for us, so thank you. And by the way, I'll apologize now. I'm going to read a statement. I usually talk off the top of my head, but this will go more quickly, and I'll get out what I need to say to y'all, so bear with me. With the support of several of you and many of your colleagues in both the House and Senate, we're here today to ask for the committee's support of HB 2568, which, if passed, will be the creation of the first Distilled Spirits Board in the United States. And we hope will operate similarly as the Oregon Wine Board, which is very successfully. The creation of an Oregon Spirits Board is a small but important investment for the state, as we firmly believe the return on investment will be significant, just again as the Oregon Wine Board has proven. So who benefits from 2568? An Oregon Spirits Board would support the more than 60 distilleries across Oregon, as well as the countless distilleries that will come. And we do, in fact, hope that many more will come. We hope to create an even greater environment to start this kind of business. We're already looked at across the country by many of our peers in other states as one of the great places to be to start a distillery, and we want to keep adding to that reputation. Because this money will be invested right here in Oregon, our peers in the independent retailers for the OLCC also stand to benefit greatly, because we would be investing to promote the sale of spirits right here in our backyard. HB 2568 would also indirectly support the many in-state industries that support our industry, from equipment manufacturers to farmers, graphic designers, truckers, building contractors, printers, web developers, and more, and I will say brewers, because it takes a lot of beer to make spirits. That's during the process. And because of the anticipated increase in patronage of Oregon spirits by Oregonians and tourists, the bill will ultimately benefit all Oregonians by way of increased revenue going to the OLCC and distributed to the general fund. So how will this be funded? Representative Williamson was just speaking to this. I want to clarify something. I think it's very important. This would be a tax of 1 to 4 cents on a per bottle basis. It's important to recognize that. So a bottle, let's say, of whiskey at $30, we're talking 1 to 4 cents. If that bottle is a 750 ml bottle, the kind of standard size we see out there, that would be a 3 cent tax. So out of $29.95, we would take 3 cents of that bottle. Keeping in mind that that $29.95 bottle is taxed at a much higher rate than, say, the bottle at $13.95. And I would also submit to you that Oregon spirits, because they are craft spirits, tend to be at the higher price point when compared to the big national brands. So again, these are higher price point products, bringing in greater taxes, still only asking for this 1 to 4 cents on a sliding scale, depending on size. By our calculations and working with the OLCC, what we're forecasting is shy of $1 million a year for the 2015 through 2017 biennium. It's about $950,000 a year. And that's 0.16% of what the OLCC will distribute to the general fund over that same time period. Again, that's less than 0.2% of the total amount collected. So why support this bill? An Oregon Spirits Board would be another first for Oregon, a model that other states can only look to emulate. The creation of an Oregon Spirits Board will help grow and sustain an industry that all Oregonians can be proud of, just as we are proud of our brewing and winemaking industries. A growing and sustained spirits industry will create living wage jobs for Oregonians. An Oregon Spirits Board will drive greater tourism for the state, which translates into greater revenues across many sectors of business in our state. With the objective to support higher education and research for our industry, creation of an Oregon Spirits Board will help grow and innovate from within, and hopefully keep a lot of these folks coming through, for example, the fermentation sciences program, staying right here in Oregon, working for companies right here in Oregon in the distilled spirits industry. Just 10 years ago, small spirits producers numbered fewer than 200 across the U.S. Today, we are in excess of 700 across the U.S. And on top of that, we have big brands who are introducing new products all the time. In other words, the competition for all of us is heating up a great deal. Now, we don't back down from a fight. We understand what it means to compete in the industry, and we're happy to compete. But additional backing from our industry would go a long way to ensure that money continues to flow into Oregon and not out of Oregon. The creation of the Oregon Spirits Board will help further build the brand Oregon, a brand that we are fanatically proud of.
Thank you.
And last but not least, the creation of an Oregon Spirits Board will ultimately increase the amount of money the OLCC contributes to the general fund, which again benefits all Oregonians. So as our state legislators did in 2003 with the creation of the Oregon Wine Board, we have the opportunity to do something great for our state by supporting HB 2568. You have the opportunity to show the rest of the country and the world what Oregon Spirit is all about. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Any other comments? Anything to add?
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Leon Glazer. I have a Glazer Estate Winery and Distillery. I'm 100% family run. I do all the production for the wine and the spirits. My mom helps me with production and paperwork. And my sister and father do sales. I would love to have a Oregon Distillers Board. It would be amazing. I don't have the time or the energy or the funds to do very much marketing, and then also to the direction of the marketing. Every marketing that I do is I'm in Roseburg, actually, a small, about 2 hours south of here. My marketing is all focused on myself and where I am. It would be nice to have big marketing that's saying, getting people coming in from Seattle, yeah. Getting people coming in from California, and to direct them and let them know where we all are. The Oregon Wine Board already exists. It already works. And so I think this could be an amazing thing, the next step. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Ted Pappas, the president of the Distillers Guild. The Distillers Guild very much supports this activity. This will be an enhancement to the operations of our distilleries in the state. So we very look forward to doing this so the Guild can then turn around and focus on the things that we do. That's building our knowledge base as distillers and producers in the state. I do want to point out one thing that when I spoke to a previous committee about something completely different, I had a chance to just make the committee members aware, because there is discussion about tax dollars. The distilled spirits industry is the most heavily taxed out of wine, beer, and spirits. We have absolutely no reduction for small production like our counterparts do. A bottle of 80-proof product, when it leaves our door, we write a check to the federal government for $2.14 per bottle. There's a high probability that that bottle is going out at wholesale somewhere between $10 and $12. Now, this isn't including the booze, the bottle, and all that kind of stuff. So right off the bat, before I've gotten paid by anybody, we're writing a check to the feds. So we do speak passionately about taxation when it comes to spirits. And so I just wanted to make everyone aware what we have to pay out when our product leaves the door is the difference of me hiring today with my current production level, one full-time person and a part-time person. So thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of this bill.
Thank you. Appreciate the testimony. Any questions? Representative Barreto.
Yeah, Chair Holby. And federal tax, every state, every producer in every state is going to pay that. As far as the 50% tax that we heard is charged in Oregon, are other states comparable to that in as far as competition that you have between other states?
Well, the Representative Barreto and Chair Holby, the tax that we pay, and I may need to lean on Ted on the exact amount. I don't write the checks at our place. And you may know as well, but it is second in the country behind Washington State. We're within a few dollars of that. The next highest, is my best recollection, is probably $10 south of where we're at. So we stand head and shoulders above everybody else in the country in terms of in-state tax on spirits.
Okay. So it makes competition tougher throughout the country then.
Absolutely.
As far as the board that's being recommended, Who would monitor that board or see if there's if it's profitable to have that, you know, like a year, 2 year, 5 years down the line, or is there, should there be a sunset on this?
I believe the board would be monitored to be similar to the Oregon Wine Board. It would be a public-private. It would ultimately be monitored, I believe, by the governor's office. As to whether or not there should be a sunset on it, I would leave that to the governor's office and the board to determine that, I suppose.
Any other questions? Not seeing any. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony this morning. Now, Steve Thompson. Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. I'm Steve Thompson, Executive Vice President of the King State Winery, Board Director and Treasurer of the Oregon Wine Board and Oregon Wine Growers Association, Board Director of the American Association of Wineries, Board Director of the Northwest Wine Coalition, and member of the Oregon Craft Beverage Council. As a longtime veteran of the Oregon wine community, I'm pleased to be here today to express support on behalf of myself and my colleagues on the Oregon Wine Board for House Bill 2568, creating the nation's first distilled spirits board. Oregon craft beer, spirits, and wine have captured the hearts and imaginations of our nation's consumers. Our craft industries create jobs, including rural jobs, and they export brand Oregon around the world. The world of craft wine, spirits, and beer consumers are beginning to beat a path to our door. The Oregon Wine Board, established in 2003 by House Bill 3442 and dedicated to the advancement of marketing, education, and research for our Oregon wine industry, has planted a flag for Oregon wine that can be seen all over the world. The establishment of the Oregon Wine Board helped create the framework that facilitated the collective collaboration that is driving our industry to great success. And we have a long way yet to go. The just released economic impact of the wine and wine grape industries for the Oregon economy study, it was just released last week, demonstrates some compelling facts about what can be accomplished when an industry is effectively nurtured. Oregon wines are found in over 40 international markets, and through Oregon Wine Board sponsored research, marketing, and education, the value of Oregon wine leads the world. The average bottle of Oregon wine sells for nearly three times the average price of a bottle of California wine. The sum of all economic activity in Oregon related directly to wine is over $3.35 billion. To put that in reference, that number was $1.4 billion in 2004 when the Oregon Wine Board was formed. In 2004, wine grapes were the state's fourth largest fruit crop. In 2013, wine grapes are the largest state fruit crop, while growing 400% in value. In 2013, estimated wine-related jobs in Oregon totaled 17,099 versus just 8,479 in 2004. In 2013, wine-related tourism contributed $207.5 million in revenues to the Oregon economy, compared to $92 million in 2004. The effective manner in which the Oregon Wine Board has worked with every aspect of the Oregon economy to create value is truly a testament to the economic potential still waiting to be unleashed from all sectors of our Oregon craft beverage industries with carefully sanctioned industry-led development. I feel that the Oregon craft spirits industry deserves the same opportunity as the wine industry has had. I urge your strong consideration for House Bill 2568 and the enablement of yet another economic success story for Oregon. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you very much for your testimony. Really appreciate it. Any questions? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Chair. As far as federal tax on wine, is it the same as what it is on spirits?
It's considerably different, and I don't have the numbers. I'm not prepared to comment on the specifics. I know there may be people here in the room that could.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if they have the same disadvantage, across the country as what
it's
spirits do.
It's much less of a disadvantage for the wine industry than it is for spirits.
Thank you. Representative Evans.
Chair Holvey, I just have a request more than a question. Is there a way we could get, adjusted for inflation and deflation, the dollar difference between 2003 and 2014? I mean, it seems like there's a doubling of the numbers, but in real dollar terms, I'm trying to figure out what the percentage difference was after the wine board came online.
Yeah, and I'm not prepared to speak to that. I presented those numbers primarily to demonstrate the enormous lift that the collaborative effort of the Oregon Wine Board brought to our industry.
As a matter of follow-up, if we could get those numbers to help sell the argument, I think it makes sense. I just want to be able to talk about what apples-to-apple comparison. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony and making an effort to support some of your colleagues in the beverage industry.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2568? Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Certainly. Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. The craft distilleries have proven to be a real kickstarter in a lot of cities in Oregon. They've done some wonderful things in some downtowns. They've provided some economic development. They were growing while some other aspects of the economy were shrinking during the Great Recession. And personally, I think there's probably some of their product in my cupboard at home. So we clearly are a supporter of the industry, and having out-of-state entities pay for it, the development is clearly attractive. Hopefully some of those will be Californians. However, we do have one concern with the bill, and that is in Section 11 in the funding mechanism. The way we read that, the state, OLCC, would collect their revenue. They would pay their bills. They would disperse the money to the Distilled Spirits Board. Then they would make the distributions to the state and to local governments. I want to thank Representative Williamson for working with us on an amendment that would ensure that the distributions to local governments would take place. Then the money for the Distilled Spirits Board would come out, and then there would be the distribution to the state, to the Treasurer's Office for the general fund. Analysis. There is a small potential to impact the shared revenue that cities would receive from liquor, from the sale of liquor. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
All right. Thank you for bringing your concerns forward. Representative Widener, a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott, going through this, looking at it, because I've heard it different ways, so I'm confused on the funding a little bit myself. And it sounds like you're getting clarification on it. But one of the things I'm looking at, and I don't know if the League of Oregon Cities has looked at this, but we haven't had an increase in agents for just monitoring this for the OLCC in a long time. And I know they have troubles just taking care of things right now. I mean, I had a liquor license and everything and an establishment and everything. And they're undermanned, understaffed to take care of a lot of this stuff. I don't know if you guys have looked into that, because I know it should be a concern for the cities and everything, especially as we start increasing the amount of hard sales. And I kind of feel like I'm part of moonshiners today at this committee or something, but especially when I'm hearing how bad they're taxed, I'm thinking they should learn from Tickle. But anyway, I'm just wondering if you looked at that, how many more agents we need out there. Has anybody talked to OLCC? I'm surprised they're not in the room here today to say the effects and everything.
They're here.
Okay, sounds like they are here. I would like to hear from them as well. But in the league's opinion on this as well, if you guys have talked about it at all.
Chair Holby, Representative Widener, I think we would also have been concerned had the bill taken Distilled Spirits Board money away from the first distribution, which is to allow OLCC to pay its bills, which is would include their staff, because I think that could have resulted in a reduction in enforcement agents. We do agree that there has been a reduction in OLCC enforcement agents over time. That has impacted public safety, I believe, due to other events that have taken place in the state. I think this OLCC will also be seeing additional agents to enforce the 91 as well. How that gets worked out, whether there'll be dual enforcement to marijuana and liquor, I don't think anybody knows. I don't know yet. but we would like to see greater enforcement and greater local control for problem licenses. But that's a very different conversation than what we're having today.
Thank you. Would you like to have the OLCC come up?
I would be kind of curious. I mean, we got a lot going on with the not the medical marijuana.
But we won't do that right now. So
it sounds like they're coming.
I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2568, and we'll have them come up in a few minutes after we open a hearing for House Bill 2671. So, Jan, give us the sobering news.
The sobering news. The major increases the annual fee for certain off-premises sales licensees of the OLCC, and it establishes Sobering Center Support Fund to receive the amount of the fee increase and to be credited to separate sub-accounts for each county. It defines what a sobering center is and declares an emergency. There's no amendments before you, and this does has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Interesting. Welcome to the committee this morning. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Holy. I'm Representative Peter Buckley. I represent Ashland, South Jackson County in the legislature. I appreciate your time and consideration of this bill. Representative Esquivel and I were asked by the City of Medford to bring forward this bill. This is kind of like you've had a long morning of discussion about the industry, and we both support the industry and the growth of the industry that has happened. Our beer industry, our wine industry, our distilled spirits industry, great support for that in terms of the economic impact it's had, but it also does have a negative side to it as well in regard to the impact on health and on services in our cities. Right now, Oregon has only a handful of sobering centers, and sobering centers are kind of the first line when law enforcement encounters someone who is under the influence of alcohol or other drugs and might considerably be a danger to themselves or others. Right now, there are very few places in our state where those individuals can be taken by law enforcement. In the most recent completed session, we were able to give a little bit of financial assistance to the remarkably well-named Buckley Center in Eugene, but there's a center in Portland, the Portland area. From rural Oregon, it's very hard to find a place for safekeeping of people who are under the influence and need help. This also goes into play with our mental health system. As you all well know, often alcohol and drugs and mental health problems are combined. There are very few places where law enforcement can bring an individual who's struggling from a mental health crisis that might be made worse by the use of alcohol and drugs. So our bill, what it does basically is says, let's look at the licensing of retail outlets for beer, wine, distilled spirits in our state, and let's make a little bit of a distinction. Let's have the mom and pop folks continue to pay a very low license fee of $100, but let's look at what would be like if we could actually raise the fee slightly on medium-sized distributors and then the larger distributors. I mean, should a major national chain be paying $100, the same as the mom and pop store, if the legislature is willing to look at that and possibly increase the fees for medium or larger size facilities, then we could generate some revenue to help pay for sobering centers around the state. So Cindy Roberts is here from representing the City of Medford. She has testimony on this, on the need for it, and basically how this might work. Representative Esquivel has been central to this, and he said he'd come down and talk on this as well. But my job was simply to introduce the bill on behalf of the City of Medford, bring it to your attention, and I appreciate the chair forcing me to get this in early so we can wrestle with it and find out as much as possible as we can before it possibly goes down to Ways and Means and for consideration. So with that, thank you for your time and consideration, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
That's sincere.
Mr. Chair, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. I want to give you a little background about our sobering center. It's not the Buckley, it's the Moore Center. We in Medford, we had a situation which we learned a very hard lesson. We ended up, before we ever had our sobering center, we had an individual that was put into the jail who was very highly intoxicated and left alone for a short period of time, and the individual passed away. So it cost our county $1.8 million for that one mistake. So consequently, we did, in fact, get behind a sobering center. and it's been very successful, and it's named after Bill Moore. And Bill Moore was the individual that was a former alcoholic and turned counselor and helped many, many people through OnTrack there in Medford, which is a very good organization that does a lot of good with alcohol and drug abuse. So that's kind of the background of the Moore Center. That's the background of where we're at today. But if, the one thing about my community, you don't find somebody laying in a ditch that's intoxicated.
Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent the city of Medford. I'm here today to talk to you a little bit about this bill that we support because it makes more equitable. Frankly, it's a very fair bill. We have, for several sessions, tried to change the graduated rates for on- and off-premise sales, and we pulled back on that this session, but then I found out that there was this bill going forward by Representative Buckley working with some other members of the city of Medford, so we decided to jump on board. It just, to us, makes sense. So while the numbers may be dwindling, you all have mom-and-pop independent grocers in your districts. The chair has likely been to the Bailey Hill Market on Bailey Hill Road. The vice chair has likely been, while he's on the river, at the South End Grocery in Oregon City. The other vice chair, I'm pretty sure, I once saw you at the Get and Go on Malala buying Pop Rocks and Pokemon cards. Had to do it.
Wow. Are there photographs?
For yourself or for your...
clear inequity when those mom and pop stores are paying the same amount for their privilege to sell beer and wine as your larger chain stores and your big box stores. So for us in Medford, we have one of the only three, actually, I found out today, and there's someone here who is a specialist from the department on sobering centers, but there's only three in Oregon. There's Eugene, Portland, Medford. And we have one that's run by the Addictions Recovery Center, ARC, which you've probably heard of. And we take in, the city of Medford brings in 1,200 people per year to that sobering center. That's three per day. And in addition, we have to take all the holds for mental health issues. If someone has a mental health crisis and there's alcohol anywhere in their person, in their car, we have to take them to the sobering center to be held there until they can be evaluated. And we take about, we take approximately one per day for that. So we're talking four people a day we're taking to the sobering center, and we don't have enough room. The sobering center costs about $225,000 a year to run, and right now the city of Medford pays for $40,000 of that. But we need to double the space that we have available. And certainly we need to see some changes in sobering centers around the whole state in order to meet this need without having to put all these folks just in the regular jail facilities. So it's not an economic leap of faith to think about the fact that if you're selling more liquor, you're likely having a larger social impact on your neighborhood. And so for us, moving it to mom and pop, $100, maybe some middle range for independent grocers, and a larger range for your larger facilities just makes sense. And I realize that right now, and I've had some great conversations with OLCC, I realize right now may not be the time as far as numbers go and figuring out how to do this revenue. It may be difficult, but it certainly seems simple, it certainly seems direct, and it certainly seems fair. So we hope you'll consider it.
Thank you. Appreciate the introduction to the bill. Any questions from the committee of this panel? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. I'm unfamiliar with these recovery centers or these sobering centers, but how are they operated? Do they have, that would have prevented the same accident or the same situation that happened in the jail?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto, this is manned 24/7. It has medical people there as well. I was with our city police one night, and they took an individual that was highly intoxicated out of a parking lot and took him over there. The medical people took him from the door forward, and they monitored him that whole night and let him loose the next day. That's the way exactly how they did it. This is where we made the shortcoming in the jail. We left the individual alone for a little while, and that was the fatal mistake.
Thank you. Sorry to hear things like that happen, and certainly support the idea of these sobering centers to help with the situation. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Sam.
So we're going to go ahead and finish up this the hearing on this bill. And I have Katie King and Alex Kyler. Excuse me for a minute before we go any further. I know I have two representatives that wanted to testify on this bill. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you mind if we go ahead and have them? It's my oversight. Somebody slipped me a note and it somehow disappeared under another piece of paper.
No problem.
Well, welcome to the committee, gentlemen, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Holby and members of the committee, I am Carl Wilson, District 3. State Representative, Grants Pass, Josephine County. Thanks for hearing us today. We appreciate this. Also want to thank Representative Buckley for bringing the bill forward and Representative Esquivel for his interest in that. I'll take just a moment and move on. In Josephine County, I think most of you are well aware of the fact that 68% of our land is owned by the federal government. Federal government is giving us virtually no compensation for that any longer. We have a very beleaguered tax base in the position now of almost not being able to afford any social services. It's getting extremely difficult. We are picking intoxicated folks out of ditches in Grants Pass. Our big difficulty is the fact that we are struggling to field a law enforcement continuum, and as a result, vagrancy has blossomed, public drunkenness has as well. Almost everything good that happens anymore in Grants Pass and Josephine County happens as a result of citizens' efforts, grassroots efforts, and we have a group of hardworking citizens who've been working very hard to put together a concept of a sobering center, and they're making great progress. So they were thrilled when Representative Buckley and Representative Esquivel showed interest in this. I even have problems with intoxicated people passed out in my radio station's front yard. I don't think that's a commentary on our programming. But nonetheless, it is a problem that we have difficulty with because we call the police. When the police do come, they pick them up, and it's sad to see them try to get them out of the foliage and get them up on their feet. Many times they're not able to stand even when they are on their feet. And the only option for us is for them to be transported to the emergency room of the hospital, which is a very expensive solution, very expensive. So again, we want to thank you for your attention to the bill today. Our situation, if not dire, is extremely close to that in our community. This would certainly be of help. So once again, thank you.
Thank you.
And for the record, my name is Dwayne Stark, House Rep District 4, which is Southern Oregon, which has both Josephine and Jackson County in it. So I can empathize with Rep Esquivel and Rep Wilson. Thank you, for Chair Holvey and committees, for hearing us today. Want to, again, share my support for this bill and share a couple brief examples of what Rep Wilson just shared, of how this actually plays out. You know, I've had business owners in Grants Pass who've shared with me about how someone has harassed them at their business, a vagrant who was drunk. Law enforcement picked them up, didn't have the bed space to put them in the jail, didn't want to take them to the hospital, release them, and the individual went back to the business and urinated on the door. Okay, that is the existence of Grants Pass these days. As far as the cost of this, so the alternative is that they end up saying, well, this person is a danger to self or others.
Well, I have the good fortune of being married to a licensed clinician, basically, MSW or LCSW, and she for a season worked at the hospital, for the hospital, and she would do the mental health evaluations if someone was a danger to self or others. And on a regular basis, she would get called in to people who, to deal with people who were intoxicated, and they couldn't, they would end up tying up these beds because they were so intoxicated that they were going to walk out in front of a car. They were going to get hurt. And without jail space and without the oversight there, the medical facility, as Rep. Escoval talked about, the tragic occurrence there, the option is to take them to the hospital. Now, the hospital in these scenarios has very limited rooms designated to someone who is a danger to self or others. So on a regular basis, my wife would be in there waiting hours for someone to come down from there or to sober up, while other people are then waiting for those rooms who are a danger to self or others, and oftentimes would then have to transfer people over to the Jackson County facilities. And it's just an entire financial mess. It's a nightmare. It's very costly. And so I appreciate what's going on, these sobering centers, that they have stepped up and tried to give a less cost or more cost-efficient solution to this. I appreciate the hard work of all those in Josephine County who have stepped up and are right on the verge of being able to introduce a fourth sobering center. So again, thank you for hearing me and my support for this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks, gentlemen, for weighing in on this. Appreciate your testimony and letting us know where you stand on this one.
Chair Holby, committee, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So now we can have Alex Kyler and Katie King. Good morning. If you introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. Chair Holby and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katie King, and I'm here today representing OSEP, the Oregon chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians. And the only thing that I wanted to add, since my points were made by the preceding speakers, is that the American College of Emergency Physicians estimates that nearly 1 to 5% of all emergency department visits are alcohol-related. So OSEP supports sobering centers. They provide appropriate care at less expense than an emergency department. So thank you.
Chairman Holby and members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager, here to support the measure in front of you. I think you've seen my testimony on OLIS, and I noted that we were the recipient of some dollars from the legislature last session to round out a local collaboration to ensure that we could keep the sobering center in Eugene active. It's called Buckley House. The we used to pay for that center really through timber dollars. As Representative Wilson mentioned, we're another one of the timber counties that were then really been impacted heavily by the lack of federal forest funds. So we created a local collaboration that notably includes the cities of Eugene and Springfield, Lane County, and Peace Health Medical Center. Peace Health, as you've heard, you know, is a very expensive option for them, and they actually helped us invest in Buckley House in order to have an option for local police services and local individuals. The funds that we received from the state, we came back during the interim in December and gave a presentation to Joint Judiciary and to House Healthcare about the efficacy of the project. One of the things I wanted to clarify is that Sobering Center is really not a treatment center. So it is that precursor to treatment. And what the funds that we were able to collectively cobble together for Buckley House allowed them to do was actually staff that center more effectively. And so now, instead of an individual waking up in the morning, as Representative Esquivel noted, and being turned loose, they've actually got a warm handshake in the morning really early, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, waking somebody up and suggesting that perhaps today's the day they go over to the other side of the facility where they can actually get enrolled in the health plan and receive detoxification services. So sobering, a little bit different than detox, but in our case, we've actually got the two, and the funding allowed for the connection between the two. to. And in fact, that's been pretty remarkable. So what we think we've done is interrupted this sort of revolving door where police agencies were picking up the same people time after time after time. Buckley House was seeing the same people night after night after night. And in fact, now we've begun to they've been able to interrupt that cycle and get some of those high utilizers actually over to detox services. So we like the bill. I did note in my testimony there's a couple things that we've seen happen in the past where there were used to be OLCC fines that if you ended up in court for a minor in possession or other OLCC violations, those dollars would go to the DA. The DA could use those for alcohol impact funding. We lost those back in 2011, and so we've been looking for a replacement for those funds for several sessions. Last session, we liked the idea of an OLCC surcharge. There's a fiscal to that, and so another option is having a local city or a local jurisdiction, a county that's issuing an OLCC permit to actually have the authority to do their own surcharge. They can do that for an administrative fee right now. You go down to City of Eugene to get your OLCC license, you're going to pay the city $35 just for their trouble. The problem with that, there's a couple of issues that we ran into with that. One is that that means the city's got to share those dollars with the county, which is sort of more in charge than cities of operating these kinds of entities. And there just wasn't that much money that we could raise. Our project in Lane County, about $300,000, a little bit north of $300,000 a year to operate that center, sort of in line with what you heard from the city of Medford. So it's not a cheap operation, and I'm just not exactly sure what this bill would purport to raise. So I'm sort of eager to see the fiscal statement on it. I think with that, cease my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Provides another outlook on this bill. Questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Is there anyone else that wished to testify on House Bill 2671? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2671 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2480.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this directs the OLCC to charge an application fee up to $150 for the issuance of a new license or a license following the ownership change. And it specifies that the application fee applies only to the licenses that have an annual fee. And it directs the OLCC to refund the fee under specified circumstances. And they will be able to adopt rules setting the fee by the class of license. And there's no amendment and no subsequent referral.
So Will Higlin and
Jesse Sweet.
Good morning, gentlemen. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Will Higlin. I am the licensing director at the Oregon Liquor Commission, and joining me today is Jesse Sweet. I brought him kind of as my security blanket. I'm the newbie at the agency, and so as I'm going to provide the testimony today, but as we get into questions, I thought it would be useful to have Jesse with me today in case I can't answer questions. So with that, I think I'll just move right ahead. What I thought I would do today is give a brief testimony. I wanted to start with the background, talk about the issue, and then potential solutions. So the Oregon Liquor Commission, as you know, the OLCC, issues licenses to businesses that are engaged in manufacturing, distributing, distribution and retail sales of alcoholic beverages. These fees for the annual licenses are amongst the lowest in the nation. So just so you know, for Oregon, a full on-premise retail license, so that's the bars and restaurants that sell beer, wine, and distilled spirits, their annual cost is $400. That's the seventh lowest in the country. An off-premise license, which you just talked about in the previous bill, for the grocery and convenience stores that sell just beer and wine, their annual license is $100, which is the lowest in the country. These fees currently are collected after the investigation is concluded and the license is ready to be issued. Currently, the OLCC processes approximately 3,500 new licenses on an annual basis. These numbers include only new establishments and change of ownership applications. The OLCC processes these without charge.
Out of 17 liquor control states, we are only one of four that currently do not charge an application fee. Over the past 5 years, the total number of new applications has risen 19% from approximately 2,800 in 2009 to more than 3,500 in 2014. Over this period, the OLCC has not hired any additional staff to process these applications and has continued to provide applicants with the best customer service possible. So here's really the issue before us today, or before us internally. Because the OLCC doesn't charge an application fee, we find that some applicants are not committed to the process, and they are either slow to provide the necessary information to complete the application or withdraw their application after significant staff resources have already been extended. The current conditions allow applicants to apply while not assuming any risk in applying for their license. Last year, over 6% or more than 200 applicants submitted applications which were never completed. This resulted in staff resources being diminished and the time to issue a license for other applicants increased. So what we propose today is House Bill 2480. It amends the ORS 471311 to require applicants for a new annual liquor license to pay up to $150 application fee. This fee does not apply to renewal licenses. By requiring licensed applicants to pay an application fee, the applicant's perceived value of submitting an application increases, and OLCC expects fewer businesses that are either unprepared or uncommitted to the entire process that will apply. This will allow staff resources to handle investigations and the processing of the increasing number of applications in an efficient and timely manner, which will improve overall customer service for all applicants. The license application fee is non-refundable, except that the commission shall refund the fee if the applicant submits a completed application and the commission does not make a decision on or before 75 days. The commission will adopt rules to establish application fees by class of license and to define what a completed application is. The revenues collected by the OLCC, including this fee, are used for agency operations with the balance of funding distributed based on ORS 471810. During the 15-17 biennium, this fee is expected to impact between 35 and 4,500 licensed applicants with expected revenues between $325,000 and $650,000. That concludes my remarks today, and Jesse and I are here to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chair, this is actually a question for you. You and I have been around this building a while. Didn't we deal with this about 6 or 8 years ago?
Yes, it seems like we did have a similar proposal.
But did it go to the Senate and die?
Well, let's ask the OLCC there.
Anything usually does. That's a good guess.
I couldn't stand it.
You want to answer that, actually?
Chair Holby, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Jesse Sweet, policy analyst with the OLCC. You have seen this before. This predated not only Will's tenure at the agency, but also mine. I don't remember exactly what happened.
Well, that's diplomatic.
I would note that the previous concept set the fee at $400, and the concept you see today sets it at $150.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would also add to my knowledge, the biggest difference here is the guarantee that we'll return. It was non-refundable before, and this is refundable if we don't hit our marks. So that's something we put in the bill as well.
Yeah, innovative. Wow, a lot of questions on this one. Representative Nose.
So mine are just, I was trying to take notes when you were talking, and so you said there are three things I missed. You said we had the lowest fee in the country, and I don't remember what that was, and then the seventh lowest in the country, and I was just curious what that was. And then 4,500 applicants, how much money does that raise?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nose, the first part of your question is on a full on-premise license, so that's your bars and restaurants that sell beer, wine, and distilled spirits. Their annual license is $400, and they're seventh lowest in the country.
Okay.
The grocery stores and convenience stores currently are $100 annually, and that's the lowest in the country.
Got it.
You got that?
Yep.
And then the second part of your question was the $4,500?
Yes, sir.
So we estimate, based on trending, that we'll do between $3,500 and $4,500, and we estimated the revenue collected by that would be between $325,000 and $650,000. The reasons for that difference is twofold. One is we still need to develop rules. to actually define exactly what we're talking about here. And then secondly, I'm very optimistic that we're not going to refund any money, that we'll hit our 75 days. That's my job. But we don't know that until we get into it. And so there's some skepticism there about exactly how much revenue we will actually raise.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions? Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Holby. The 35 to 4500 now do establishments that already have a license, do they have to renew every year? And is that application then, do they need to apply every year and would pay that also?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barreto, no. So the renewal process, this is an upfront application fee for brand new businesses or change of ownerships. It doesn't apply to renewals.
Okay. That's a good question. I didn't know that.
Thank you, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We went over the fees being the lowest, but where are we tax-wise, though, when they're buying the alcohol at the store? So I was hearing we're one of the highest, and for a small restaurant, $400 a year is quite a bit on the renewal process. So we're still making the money back up on the tax side, right? Because aren't we the highest?
On that one.
The
only tax.
Chair Holby, Representative Widener, we at the OLCC.
Could you introduce yourself for the record first?
Again, for the record, Jesse Sweet, OLCC. We at the agency prefer to talk in terms of markup rather than tax when we're talking about distilled spirits. What we have is approximately a 100% markup on distilled spirits, which funds the general fund and all of the other great programs in the distribution. Our tax in Oregon on beer and wine is relatively low at the wholesale level compared to other jurisdictions.
If I may follow up? Was a little more on the distilled spirit sides and everything, but and you avoided that one, I see, because we are 100% markup from the other states. To me, that's a much fairer tax, because somebody who's selling a lot, there's going to be paying more for that. Somebody, you take a small restaurant that's not selling a lot of distilled spirits, and they're $400 a year in the renewal fee, and they're paying the tax, they're going to be getting hit a lot harder than the, let's just say, TGI Fridays or some of the big national chains that are running hundreds of people through there, you know, a night, versus the guy who only has 30 customers a night. You see what I'm getting at? So these fee increases hurt the small restaurants that are out there.
Thank you, Chair Holvey and Representative Widener. I'd like to make one small clarification. Again, this bill proposes an application fee for new applicants only, so it would be a one-time fee. And also on distilled spirits, I would like to note for the record that our licensees are able to purchase distilled spirits at a 5% discount over the list price, what you would see in the your local liquor store.
Chair Holvey. So just a point of clarification. So once they complete the application process, they will be refunded the fee. Is that correct?
No.
It's late.
No. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hurd, no. The application fee is basically non-refundable.
Okay.
Unless we miss our mark. Our target will be 75 days. We have to respond. If we don't respond and get it completed
okay,
within
so
that time frame, we'll refund
if
it.
If you do not perform. Okay. I got it.
Okay.
Thank you. Other questions?
I'm sorry. I didn't explain that. Sorry. No worries. That's why.
Thank you. Mr. Perry, would you like to come up?
If we could, before they leave, Mr. Chair, could we go back to my question that I had much earlier for enforcement?
For the license.
We'll take care of that in a few seconds.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. And to Rep. Escobar's point, actually, this bill has been passed probably in four different legislative sessions. It dies not ever on its own accord. Once it was wrapped up in a bigger bill, it got vetoed. Once it didn't get a rule suspension at the end, and one time it just didn't, because of the fee increase, people got nervous. But this is something the industry has been working with them, along with the union at the OLCC, because there was a time period years ago where a lot of licensees had to wait 120 days, and that's a lot of uncertainty for a small business trying to open up. So getting the certainty of being able to get an answer, remember, it's not a yes or no, it's an just you need the answer in a certain time frame, is a value to somebody that's an open up in a business. So making sure they have the people there and everything else, it's been something that we've been working out for years on this, and hopefully one of these days we'll actually get it.
Thank you. I was just concerned that the restaurants were having a problem with this bill.
No, we had a problem at 120 days. We've got it much better.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Representative Barreto, another question?
Yeah, Chair Holtby, thank you. Clarification, the $150 application fee, now does that get, and then there's a $400 license fee, is that correct? So it would be $550 for them to pay, or does the $150 get credited to the $400?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barreto, right now it's an addition, so it would be $550 in total.
Okay, he's all right.
Thank you. Don't see any other questions. Thank you, Mr. Perry, for coming forward. I know you weren't signed up, but appreciate that. Going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2480.
That's a good question. I didn't understand.
And
yes.
Which one? 25.
Sometimes we are.
Yeah. No, it's 25.
Sometimes not.
Right? I mean, you know.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
All these things.
So like to,
there's not a clear winner or loser, right?
Just open up House Bill 2568 for public hearing. Representative Widener, would you like to ask your question again of OLCC?
Yes.
Good morning, if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Steve Marks, Executive Director of OLCC.
So, Steve, just real quick, because we had a bill that came in where they're looking to take essentially 1 to 4 cents out of the budget and everything. And I know you guys are hurting for agents just out in the field for doing enforcement and things like that, and we're looking at a huge expansion. Is it something through the budget process where you haven't been allotted the agents that you need for going out and monitoring establishments that have licenses and things like that? But I know you're understaffed, and then with the marijuana coming on and everything else, if you see this affecting your department at all.
Chair Holvey, Representative Wagner, I do. There's an effect overall, but let me just talk about our role in the system. And a lot of these bills that you've seen here came out of our work with the Joint Legislative Task Force. Representative Doherty chaired that along with Senator Beyer. And I just say that we've put in a budget request that we think meets our agency needs. Enforcement. On the liquor side will not grow dramatically under this budget. One of the things that we've pointed out is we need to increase our capacity availability inside our warehouse. We're about at throughput. That is the greatest threat and strain on the revenue system that we have. That affects manufacturers. It affects our outlets, our distillers, and our own stores. So that's our focus in this budget. We have intense capital investments going forward to support the entire system and to stabilize state revenues. I would say with respect to the choices you have here, the commission did enact early on the 50-cent surcharge last summer, so it would be available to the governor's budget, to the legislature, to make choices about how you wanted to allocate that spending. Heretofore, it's been in place since 2009. The legislature has used it to support general fund obligations, and you've diverted it outside the formula to support the general fund. So, you know, that's a part of the system that has been in place for some time now. We took a little heat because we keep continuously doing a temporary surcharge. But we put that forward so it would be available to spend. We see our role as, you know, your role in this. We provided the money. You get to make the priority choices on how you want to spend it amongst those industry allocations that you have. We've worked really hard with the industry in terms of all these bills you've heard today to try to perfect their concepts, to try to minimize the tensions between the market tensions between the various players. But some of those you still see today, although I think we have a great deal of general consensus moving forward. And we're working on the edges of the choices that hopefully you will make here to support this industry. And we think it's vitally important that they do get that support.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on whatever bill that was, House Bill 2568. And would like to open up a work session for the introduction of committee bills.
Mr. Chair, I have a relatively lengthy motion involving six bills. I move that the following legislative concepts be introduced as committee bills: LC 1891, dated November 6, 2014, LC 2174, dated January 14, 2015, LC 3494, dated January 27, 2015. LC 3495, dated January 26, 2015, LC 2496, dated January 26, 2015, LC 3707, dated January 30th, 2015. I move that they be introduced as committee bills. How was that? That was my best OV impersonation.
My error.
It's best I got.
So we have one correction to your motion.
What did they say, Mr.
My
Chair?
Mistake.
It should be LC 3496 instead of LC 2496.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend that motion. I was in error. I think I said 2496. In fact, I'm moving that LC 3496, dated January 26, 2015, very, be introduced to the committee bill.
Thank you. Very gracious of you.
Thank you, Jim.
Representative Barton moves that LC 1891, dated November 6, 2014, LC 2174, dated January 14, 2015, LC 3494, dated January 27, 2015, LC 3495, dated January 26, 2015, LC 3496, dated January 26, 2015, and LC 3707, dated January 30th, 2015, be introduced as committee bills. Committee, this motion and this vote does not mean that you support or oppose a particular bill in this. This is simply a process to enable a bill to be entered into the process for discussions. So with that, are there any objections? Is there any other discussion on the motion?
Maybe just a comment, and I would concur. I think as a general rule, we've done this as a courtesy to allow the introduction of these bills, and it doesn't indicate support or opposition. It's a courtesy.
I appreciate that. It's a courtesy to allow people to bring topics before the legislature to talk to, and we've long considered that almost a right of people to bring issues forward. So with that, any other discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection to the introduction of these bills? Seeing none, the motion passes. And with that, we will close the work session. And also, we will close the House Committee on Business and Labor.
With a minute to spend.
Committee on Business and Labor.
With a minute to spend. House.